One, two, three. Man, I feel like I haven't talked to you all week. What have you been up to?
Sleeping. I just woke up.
Really?
Well, when like, we talked earlier, you said we're back in 30, and I said, okay, and then I went directly to bed.
I just got up when we were talking.
Yeah, I haven't really been sleeping the whole week, but just right now. So I had one of those things where you wake up and you have like a semi sort of sleep paralysis, but this time I said, instead of feeling weird about it, I just went back to bed for a minute and then woke up and was fine.
That's nice. A lot of times I'll wake up from nightmares. I have pretty bad nightmares fairly often, and I'll wake up and it'll be like time to wake up. But I wake up and I'm like, I feel rested, but I feel like completely mentally unwell because of that nightmare. Oh. And so I go back to sleep for a while, and that helps with that too.
I don't remember the last nightmare that I had.
Oh, that must be nice.
Like, yeah, it's weird. Well, I don't remember the last dream that I had either.
Interesting.
So, yeah, it's just like it fades to black and then suddenly I'm awake. It's like Groundhog Day almost, in a sense.
Yeah, that sounds really, really great. Man. If only I could NPMI that.
Yeah, well, you can't be sure that I didn't, that someone, I'm not using some dependencies, that someone hacked. And I was talking with someone about that the other night. We went out with some of Jamie's friends for Jamie's birthday. And one of her friends' husbands is into, just kind of tech stuff. I think he studied bioengineering in college, and he's really into, I'm having a hard time thinking right now. He's really into just kind of tech stuff and like sci-fi and Arduinos and like 3D printers. I think he has a 3D printer now. And I think if I remember something he said correctly, he was working on some sort of like milling setup. Like he's building a milling setup.
Like a CNC mill kind of thing?
Or? Yeah, CNC mill. Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. But we were talking about, and also a friend of the show, Kevin, was with us too. So we were just talking about things that we had read, and that was one of them, that article that we mentioned, like, I'm stealing all your credit card numbers thing. And he was like, what?
It's terrifying. I talk to my mom about this stuff sometimes too, because, I mean, she worries a lot about these kind of things, the security and the privacy, because it's hard to understand. And man, we always come back to this. It's like, normal people should not have to, these should not be concerns that even arise, but they are, and normal people hear about them, they're like, I don't even really fully understand what that means, but that sounds really bad.
Yeah,
I mean, they're not wrong.
They're not wrong. They're not wrong at all. It was just kind of funny, a kind of interesting conversation over dinner. He was just like, what? And they were like, yep. And that was kind of the end of it. We ended up talking about quantum computers for a little while after that. And it was a pretty good night. I got an affogato, which an affogato was supposed to be gelato, but it was clearly ice cream in this one. So I was kind of let down by that affogato experience.
I can't say I've ever had one.
Oh man. So
you recommend it, but only with gelato, not with ice cream.
Right. Yeah.
It's a ripoff.
So if you get it from a gelato place, it's going to be pretty good. It's a lot smoother and not just like blatantly sugary. That's why I like it, because it's not like a super sugary dessert. It's like a smoother dessert, and I like coffee a lot. So you can kind of blend the two together. And like a good gelato place, like we have one in Hanover. It's an actual Italian gelato. It's super good. It's super good with espresso on it. But yeah, if you just get like a freezer brand gelato or some sort of ice cream, it's just not the same.
Yeah, you got to go to the source. You got to get the original. You got to do it yourself, just like with code.
Oh, no.
Let's bring it back, right? this is a tech podcast.
Yeah, it's just one of the, because we were talking about that, and just like there's not really a way that I can keep up with standards, I guess, and read every single line of code. Like, I just certainly can't go through Node Modules folder. I mean, you install one... You NPMI jQuery or something, and that has a number of dependencies that come into. But when you start, like,
well, I think we mentioned this specifically about Nuxt in the last episode.
Oh yeah,
it was like, it's like 1,100 dependencies or something. It's a crazy number to even think about manually auditing everything.
You can't really. And so there's tools. It would just be undoable. Right? I mean, so Kevin was talking about how he has, he was talking about some tools that are available that can go through and they can kind of like say, hey, this needs an update, or hey, this has a known vulnerability and stuff like that. But even then, that's still not on the level where we kind of need it to be, you know, because then you're scanning for known vulnerabilities, which is good, but it's still not as, it's a different vector.
Keyword being known.
Right. Yes. It's a different vector, you know? So yeah, that was a fun conversation. And then yesterday, why I'm so tired right now is because we had a few people over yesterday to watch a fight, and on the East Coast, the main card wraps up around 1:30 a.m.
Oh, geez.
And these days, it takes me about 2 days to recover from a 2 a.m. Sleep time. So I'm trying to recover before Monday, but it was a good night. Pretty inspiring night. The heavyweight belt was on the line, basically, and the current champ, he just set the record for a number of, like, the longest streak of defenses as heavyweight, which is 3 for heavyweights. And his opponent is this like 6'4", 270-pound guy who is just jacked out of his mind, Jack City. His name is Francis Ngannou. And so for like months, everyone's been saying, there's no way Stipe can win. Stipe's the current champion. Stipe is just a regular dude, you know, works part-time as a firefighter. He's not like, you'll see him and he's big, but he's not like that guy's, you know, the guy would destroy anybody. Whereas Francis looked like a robot, kind of. And so for months, everyone's like, there's no way he's going to win. It's over, you know, and he won. And it was pretty inspiring because there's a lot of parallels you can draw and like in life to that, I guess. Like, you know, everyone just kind of writing him off because he didn't look a certain way or didn't have a certain physical characteristics, when really he won because of the basics and the fundamentals. His basics were good. His fundamental wrestling was good. His cardio was better, and that's why I won. And I was trying to think of a blog post I could write today to kind of parallel them about like the foundationals of writing code. Like, get your basics down. And things build from that. There's just so many tools that have like the kitchen sink, and I'm thinking to myself, like, yeah, there's like a lot of people contributing to this stuff, but how can it possibly be cohesive? You know, I think Rails did a pretty great job of being, you know, mostly cohesive, but that's one example. Maybe Django too, but there's so many out there, you know. Everyone's always talking about, here's this tool, there's just another new tool, and here's another build tool, and here's a new thing called Parcel, and, you know, I'm just trying to refactor my working habits back to just fundamentals, the fundamental building blocks, like writing tests and trying to write idiomatic code and having things kind of stem from that.
Yeah, learning how to, I mean, it always comes back to this, and this is said, I think, at every level of computer science, but like the only hard problem in computer science is naming things. And then right. Cache issues, naming things, I think, is kind of a stand-in in a lot of ways for what you're describing here. That if you get the basic things about your application right, if you build out an application that is well structured, then all the other stuff, like all the additional stuff that you have to add over time, and all the new things that you have to learn are pretty straightforward. It's really just about those fundamentals, getting those basic things right. Understanding like what makes an application pleasant or difficult to work with, and then steering yourself constantly towards the simple things that make it more pleasant to work with.
Right. Yeah. It's all about boiling a problem to its base components or base, like the base needs is the biggest thing for me, because we'll have meetings, especially at Design Collective, we'll talk about stuff and talk about features. And a lot of what my job is before even writing code is to think about that and distill it to the most simplest possible solution. Because I feel like if I don't do that, then that's where you get kind of feature creep coming in. That's where you get feature rot coming in. You know, that's where you get changes that conflict with previous changes. You know, like, oh, here's, you know, we agree on some permission settings, and then a change next week might invalidate some of those agreements, you know? So that's a lot of my struggle, and not even really a struggle, but a lot of my my plight is to think about that sort of stuff, and then think about like, okay, how can we simplify this? How can we make it as simple as possible? So a lot of my responses will be, when someone says, "Hey, can we do X?" My response will be, "Okay, we have a couple of options here. We can do X, or we can do A, and this is why, or we can do B, and this is why." And A is always my simplest way to do it without requiring lots of changes, and why, versus B, which is we could do it this way, but it'll take X amount longer and it will touch X amount of more places or things. And usually I can convince them to go with route A.
That's what I'm trying to do so much more of now is like the, I guess, systems thinking or whatever it's called. But just really, really fully plotting out when I decide, okay, in whatever I'm building, when I decide I want to add something, or when I'm told that I have to add something, I really am trying to go in there and figure out, okay, well, here's this thing that somebody wants or that I want. What are the various ways I can make this happen, and why? What are the pros and cons of each, and what does that mean for future changes? Like, if this thing gets changed in some way, how would that affect it? Is that a change I even need to be concerned with? How likely is that to happen? What are the full, like, what's the really, the holistic view of, I want to add this button here? Because people will often come to you, whether that's a designer or a project manager or whatever, they'll come to you and be like, "Oh, we need to add this thing, this button," and so often there's not a lot of thought that's been put into that. Not necessarily because it's that person's fault or anything. Like, not to say anything negative about this person who hasn't necessarily thought it through all the way, but a lot of times it just is kind of the role of the developer, at least in the roles that I've had recently, to go through there and think these things through and be like, okay, well, this will take, just like you were saying, here's the simplest option, here's the most obvious option, but here's why that either A is a great idea or B isn't such a great idea, and we should go with this other option because of, you know, whatever reasons, or we have these three options and here's why. And, right. And it makes it, there's so much less code writing and so much less time spent writing code that then has to be rewritten. Which is a big deal for me, because I've spent a lot of time rewriting code because somebody says, make this thing this way, and then I make it that way, just doing the way that makes sense to me, without going through and fully planning out, writing a design document, and then they're like, oh yeah, that's great, and then a week later they're like, oh, but I needed to do this thing as well. And it's like, well, if you'd said that a week ago, I would have totally done the other thing differently. And so it's really, I think there really is something to, I mean, just planning more. Just thinking and planning more before putting pen to paper, as it were, pixel to screen.
Yeah. That whole situation reminds me of an episode of It's Always Sunny where it's Mac Day and they have to do whatever. So each of them have a day of the year where everyone in the group has to do everything that person says. So whatever they want to do that day, the people have to do it, and they're not allowed to scream or complain. But they are allowed to bring a pillow, and they're allowed to scream into the pillow. And a couple of times in the episode, Max says something, and then Dennis just screams into the pillow. I have those feelings sometimes, and I work really hard to not let them translate into text sent via the internet somewhere to somebody else. But
yeah, it's really easy to do that.
Yeah,
I mean to not constrain yourself.
Not scream into the pillow with your fingers. Put a pillow on your keyboard and start typing.
Yeah,
that's equivalent. Yeah, that's. I feel the same way. A lot of it, that's why I try not to rush things. And that was one of my big things that I've mentioned several times to my coworkers, is like, this year, last year I was rushed a lot. And last year I introduced some bugs because I was rushed a lot. And so this year, and I think we can afford to this year, take a step back and take it a little bit slower and think about things a little bit longer. And I also said that any new features, any new code that I introduce and any code that I modify within reason, there's going to be test coverage for. And I mean within reason, so if something doesn't have any tests at all, it might take me a while to bootstrap some stuff and get that going. But for the most part, everything I've done so far has been added with test coverage. And it's been amazing because we're just the more stuff that you add to the application, the more complicated it becomes. And recently we've added some more like different types of user accounts and also different types of store accounts. So now a product being visible depends on the type of store it is and also a setting that that store is set. So if a store is a certain type, they're only visible to certain user accounts unless they override that with a checkbox in their settings page. So as you can imagine, the getting and listing functions become a lot more complex because now we're having to filter based off of what type, is there a user that's currently logged in and what type of user is this? But also if you're querying for a product, what store type does this product belong to? And also do they have a setting to override this other, you know, this other thing before that, that all happens before a user even sees a response in a listing or even on a get request. And so luckily it's become a lot easier because I've mentioned it several times, I'm actually working on a blog post about this now for how I'm approaching Phoenix contests with Design Collective. And luckily, since products and stores are both namespaced into their own browse context, so we have marketplace.browse and marketplace.manage, and browse is read-only, right? So luckily, since this stuff only affects the browsing context because it's coming from the context of a user viewing the site, right? Through the publicly accessible front end without having to like sign up or anything like that, these permission changes really only happen in that spot. And I don't have to worry about breaking, for example, the store admin. Like if I limit something, suddenly the store's inventory listing is filtered differently, you know? So it's not really a concern. But the tests have really helped me as well kind of work around all these edge cases, because really the trouble is when you're adding more features and stuff, there's just more edge cases that you have to think about. So obviously, like, the main kind of focus of a change or the main scope of a change is relatively easy to keep in mind. It's just that all these kind of things on the periphery can change or not change, or there can be new items. And so that's, to me, where all the tests are helping. And luckily, my coworkers are really understanding. And even luckier than that, my boss is the one to kind of push deadlines back. She'll ask me how I'm doing, and I'll say, well, I'm working hard. I still have this much done. And she'll be like, let's push it back a week without me even asking, you know? But lately that's been getting more difficult. And after these tests have gone in, so I think it was like Thursday, I wrote 20 tests to cover public product filtering and get requests. And now making those changes is a snap because I have them all written out. And really it just makes things down the road faster, even though the upfront initial investment is a little bit slower. But yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's just one of those things where really it comes down to the foundations, like the basics, like frame it, you know, like frame the problem, frame it out with tests, make the changes. And once that's done, the next building block on top of it becomes a lot easier to handle.
That's sort of how I feel about all this stuff, with testing, with planning and architecture, all these kind of things. Like, it definitely does take some more time up front, like mm-hmm. you were saying. But I mean, honestly, in the long run, it's just less time.
You got
again. It's less time spent rewriting code. It's less time spent worrying about mm-hmm. code when you have good test coverage. It's less time spent worrying about changing code or breaking things when you change code and then having to go back and refix things when you have good test coverage. It's just, mm-hmm. man, it's the only way to work on anything of any real scale.
Yeah, you gotta have it. You just have to have it. Yeah, and that's, I don't know, it's kind of silly to draw that parallel to a fight, but that's what I was thinking about, you know? I was thinking like, wow, this guy's fundamental is really what won him the fight. Well, that and his cardio. So the other guy, Francis, is just like one punch to everyone his way into a title fight.
Right.
And he's only been fighting professionally for 5 years, which some people might think, oh, that's a long time. You know, that's not really, in terms of a sport where you're having to physically fight somebody else who's also been training, and they've been training in ways to offensive tactics, but also defensive tactics, you know? So if someone has 5 years of experience, matches up against someone who's been fighting for 10 years, you know, that's literally double the time, double the number of hours someone's put in, double the muscle memory, even more importantly, that someone else might have. And Francis has really just relied on his just sheer size. He's just massive to steamroll people, you know? And when he ran up to an opponent where they were able to knock a hit in the head, with these big punches, he ran out of energy after the end of the first round and couldn't do anything for the next four rounds. couldn't do.
That's rough, man.
Like he could almost not even stand up. He was that tired.
Wow.
And to me, it's crazy because like that's you're a professional, you know, and you've never been outside of like round two. And like now I'm not trying to drag him through the mud or anything because I couldn't, of course not.
Like but, I'd probably kick your butt.
Yeah, mine, but certainly. But it's certainly like that's a good parallel to thinking of application development. Like you can sprint through round one MVP and you're like, oh, this is awesome. And you're tired. And then you hit round two and you're like, oh, no. Like we didn't focus on the foundations and the fundamentals and we gassed out. You know, we used our muscles. We ran too fast. We moved too quickly. We didn't think about pacing ourselves. We didn't think about, you know, if I try to throw this punch so hard so many times with my right arm, I'm not going to be able to use my right arm to defend anything later, you know. And that's kind of what it seems like software development is similar, like just similar, right? You can sprint through the MVP phases and you get tired, but if you didn't really like really think about the design phase, really think about the architecture, if you just had this like flew under this moniker of like, just ship it, you know, and move fast and break things, it's kind of the same idea as go as heavy as you can for the first round. And when really like it sounds cool. Like people are like, oh, I can get behind that, you know, just knock people out left and right. Throw all your energy into round one. But what happens when you get outside of round one? You get dragged onto the floor and you get held there and it's just not a good situation.
Well, that's like one of the classic startup problems too, is the company that makes something and they're like, oh yeah, they release it and then it's like, yeah, we do have some degree at least of product market fit. And then they're like, okay, but we need to add these things. And they go back and look at their tech stack and they're like, oh no, we can't do it. We can't add any of these things. We need to basically restart over. There is a place. There is a place for, as you said, the move fast and break things. There is a place for that. And there is a, it can be useful, especially when building prototypes and like figuring ideas out and trying, especially in stuff like games where you gotta try stuff and you gotta mess around and like see how things actually feel once they're a real thing that you can actually, you know, push keys on your keyboard and have the computer do the thing that resembles your game or your idea. Like there's totally a place for moving quick and writing disposable code or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a line and you have to be careful. You have to be careful and decide for yourself, for your company, for whatever you're working on. When you've crossed that point where it's like, okay, now I really need to slow down. I really need to take some time and figure out the right and the wrong of how to move forward.
Yes. Yeah. And for us, it was when we have customers paying us monthly, like when customers start paying us. So like at first we were just paying like working off commission. So they weren't really paying us. And so in a weird sense, it didn't feel like you're obligated to be on point all the time.
Totally.
It might sound bad to say that, but it's just how it is, you know? But at a certain point where someone actually starts paying you monthly and you're debiting their card monthly, that was it for me. I was like, okay, we need to slow down on a couple of things and make sure that everything is stable and covered. And that's what I'm kind of working on now. And there's been a few bugs here or there, like just hard to even predict. So like one thing that happened was, I have a task that gets run every day and it generates a new sitemap and then it pings Google of the updated products and the removed products and stores and whatnot. But obviously Google can't re-index everything immediately, right? And so someone was able to find a product that had been removed or something. It's kind of like a long, it's like a rabbit trail.
When you
trail.
Say find, you mean they found it in Google search results?
Or? They found it in like a cached Google response, cached Google link, yeah. Yeah, so they're able to find it through Google because, again, Google shouldn't. I mean, they're just not going to be able to, like, you send them 3,000 new links, it's not going to update immediately. It's just
they're
not
fast,
going to.
But they're not magic.
Exactly.
Right.
Like, yeah.
They got the whole internet to deal with.
Yeah, and so Design Collective had been like, we filter out things for like published status and all that stuff. But originally, when it was originally made, and a lot of the code in Elixir was just kind of like ported over one to one, and wasn't really. I didn't like have time to like re-engineer or like change a lot of stuff.
Right.
And so this case kind of existed before too. So instead of like when stores delete products, we don't actually delete it out of database. We mark it as deleted. Like we have a timestamp called timestamp column called deleted at. So if it's not nil, then it's been deleted. So because occasionally people will be like, oh, I mistakenly deleted this. Is there a way to get it back? You know, and I would rather be like, yeah, it's easy versus nope, sorry, you know. And so we were filtering for status.
Oh, but why?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so we're filtering for statuses, but for some reason, one endpoint wasn't filtering for deleted at. So that's how they were able to stumble upon it. They weren't 404'd. And they ended up contacting the store and like, hey, I want to purchase this thing. And the store is like, what are you talking about? Basically, you know?
Right.
And that's an example where had I spent more time on testing some of this stuff, I probably would have seen, oh yeah, this probably should not show people deleted stuff, you know? And it's one of those things where it's kind of like a default scope. Like most every query kind of takes that into account, but there's not really a way to globally say, hey, always do this. And I don't really think you should always like have a situation where you say, hey, always do this. Similar to default
scopes. Don't use default scopes, everybody.
Yeah.
They're bad.
Yeah. Exactly.
They'll bite you in this exact kind of way, but in the opposite direction.
Yeah. And so really I think the right answer is to slow down a little bit and make sure that your tests, your functions there are tested, but also that you're actually thinking about, like, able to think through each function in there. Like, how is this be, how, like, what kind of user is requesting this and how are they, like, should they be able to see it? Like, if it's a published item, everyone should see it. If it's a store admin viewing a draft item, that person should see it, but no one else should see it, you know? It's one of those things where had I slowed down a little bit and actually thought about, like, it was like, oh yeah, easy, I can build this endpoint out. Bam, like filtered out draft products. We're good to go, guys, you know? And had I would have like thought for a second more, I would have dawned on me to also think about, oh, we should probably filter out deleted items too. But that's not like a way that my brain works. So in their mind, they sell a product that has one inventory remaining. It goes out of stock. They just delete the product. And in my mind, you don't, like, I wouldn't do that. There's right. not really a need to delete it, you know? So that's kind of what I mean. Like, there's different ways people use your application. They use it differently than you intend when you build it. And this like being able to move slower allows me to think about all these different cases. So now I know people are deleting stuff left and right, you know? So that's something that I have to be really aware of. Whereas before, it's just not like in front of my mind because that's not how I use the application.
Yeah, I think it's really funny. You said people use your application differently than you intend, and that's such a startup thing. Like, you release something, and the people start using it not only in a different way, but sometimes for an entirely different purpose than you thought people were going to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it can be a really hard thing to accept isn't quite the right word. But accept as a developer, yeah, because you're like, oh well, I really liked the thing that I was doing, but then it's like, well, I guess you're paying me or sure. You're, you know, using my service, but your eyeballs or whatever yeah. the goal is. But it's like, well, okay, I guess I've unintentionally pivoted.
Yeah. Well, that's another reason why I like having, so some people have like a deleted Boolean flag, but I like using a timestamp because you can see exactly when it happened. Cause there's been a couple of cases where someone's like, oh, I didn't delete this. And I'm like, you did. Yeah, I didn't like, I didn't say it like at, that, but you did.
2:30 a.m. on a Saturday night.
You did click that button because we don't automatically do that. Like, someone was telling one of our customer reps, like, oh, this thing was automatically deleted. And I had to say, like, no, it wasn't, to our rep. Like, it wasn't deleted because there's nowhere at any point in the application is there even code
there's
that
not
runs
a line
that
of code
automatically
that would do
delete
that,
the thing.
Right.
So mm-hmm. they deleted it, you know? So it's weird because sometimes I think people feel like developers are being defensive because it hurts hurts your pride a little bit when a bug happens or something happens you didn't expect. But sometimes you're just like, no, that's not what happened because people forget.
Sometimes people think that you aren't going to expect something.
Right.
That you actually, it's like, it's not that this is unexpected. It's that it's literally impossible.
Sure. It's literally, yeah, that's basically what I said. Like, literally it's impossible. That does not happen. I think the case was when someone sold out of something, they thought that it automatically deleted that product out of their inventory because they wanted to restock it, which is exactly why I don't do that. And so I was like, no, that's in fact not what happens. So yeah, I don't. But anyway, yeah, there's just stuff that I have to think about where that's what makes it hard. Like, being the only person doing it, there's so many like contextual things. And I only know how people use it through talking to people when they're having problems. You know, they don't like, they're not going to message you and be like, oh, I had a great time today and I did this, this, and this, you know?
Right. Nobody calls their plumber to say that the toilet's working great.
Yeah, it's working great. And I swapped the hose out.
Everything's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's another challenge, is like keeping that context in mind when you're thinking about these features and you know, people are probably screaming like, user testing, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, there's four of us. I have to sleep. I have to work out. I have to cook food. I have to have a life outside of building this business, you know.
User testing. Yeah, the live users are testing it. Come on.
The live users are testing it, yes.
What do you call that?
Yeah. Basically, yeah. But that's my life, people. If you want to be a CTO out there, talk to me and I'll let you know what it's like. That's all
good. You got to get some more devs, man.
Yeah, working on it. Working on it. In the meantime, I'm working on a static site too for the parent company that owns Design Collective. So that's fun. And the way it was designed was very Scroll Jacky. And I said, you know what I said, Paul? I said, sounds good. And you know what I did, Paul? I NPM'd jQuery.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah.
I mean, it'll do the trick, certainly. Yeah.
There's no reason for me to use Vue there because...
Yeah, no, right.
It's a portfolio site, and there's already a really great plugin that does 90% of what I need called fullpage.js. Even though I don't like scroll jacking, it does what I need.
And it only hijacks half of your customers' credit card numbers.
Correct. Yes. Three quarters. It only hijacks the MasterCards, which is...
Nobody uses that.
I have one in my wallet, but I don't use it. Yeah. So that's fun too. It's been interesting to step away from like app development and back into like building out a marketing page. And I'm using Statamic for it and full page. Another reason why I didn't use Vue is because I didn't really feel like I could have used a CMS and built like a spa, but again, it was super overkill.
Yeah, who are you kidding? It's just over engineering at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love Vue and single page apps and Nuxt and all that stuff. Like it's great. It's we talk about this all the time. It's revolutionized how we do dev.
Mm-hmm.
But like I'm not gonna break it out for a static site like a simple portfolio site or something.
Why would
that's
you?
Crazy.
Why
man.
Would you do that? I don't so know. Much. I guess if you're young and enthusiastic, you might. But I'm not.
Yeah, for fun. Like certainly, legitimately. Like if I was gonna redesign my website or something, yeah. I wouldn't. I'm gonna use fun, like cool technologies that I can experiment and play around with. But for like an actual client site, that's
you know no what way. I did. You know what I did recently. To stop myself from doing that, I'm using Statamic to host my site and my blog or build it, and it's set up on a DigitalOcean droplet that I have to SSH into. I have to push up my changes, SSH into it, and then pull the changes, and I just don't want to do that. using the default Statamic theme, so I did it on purpose. I had a blog post that I got rid of. Because I'm not using Nanobox for this anymore. Nanobox is great, but not necessarily for.
Have we talked about Nanobox on the show?
Maybe I've mentioned it. I don't know.
Do you want to just do a quick?
Oh yeah, sure. It's a thing where you put a YAML file in your directory and you push to. A repo and Nanobox takes the box file and it's kind of like a Docker compose file where you specify like I need this like a PHP environment and I need a storage like a static storage environment and then you put that in the box file and then you send it to GitHub and then they see GitHub and they automatically provision those things for you and deploy them. And what's cool is that for example, and what part of why I was having some minor issues that I could have worked around, I just didn't want to spend the time to do it because it just didn't seem like it was worth the effort. But basically, every time the PHP container would get deployed, it would just ship a new container into it, which would mean that I would lose any contents that I didn't have in the Git repository. And
oh, sure.
Yeah, I didn't want to take some time. Like I could certainly like set up a cron or something to commit content back to the repository for me, but again,
Exactly.
Yeah. So what I did was they have storage network drives, and so I just added a storage dir and connected it, and I symlinked the content files to that.
That's hilarious. Nice.
And it worked great, except when you had to update Statamic, there were some permission issues and weirdness that would happen. And
gotcha.
That I was just like, screw it. I set up and DigitalOcean just like doubled the RAM and for like they basically like so the $5 droplets are now like 1 gigabyte servers instead of 512
Jeez.
Megabyte servers. Yeah.
I remember when my laptop came with 256 megabytes. Like right. I got a new laptop and it had 256 megabytes in it and I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is awesome.
And now for $5, you can get a server with one CPU or maybe two CPUs. I can't remember. And a gigabyte of RAM. And like 25 gigabytes of file space, file system space. Yeah, so literally I spun up a new repo. I SSH'd in, turned off the root account, made a deployer account, git cloned the thing, and then I was like, done.
Right.
And yeah.
Yeah, sometimes the old ways still work.
Yeah, but I'm trying to make myself write more, and I found that when I was using like static hosting, I would always I would just mess around with stuff, and I wouldn't actually write. So
you mean now, like blog posts?
Yeah, yeah, just like more, yeah, like writing about more things. So like I have an article I'm working on about Phoenix Contexts, and I have an article I'm working on about like my development environment the past few months that I've really been liking a lot, like keyboard shortcuts and stuff for VS Code that I've been using. Just kind of like a tooling update. But yeah, I want to try writing more because I'm learning a lot of stuff, and that helps me learn, helps me remember, but also it's a good reference, and also it might be able to help someone else. So it's just a good thing to have.
That's like the worst feeling in the world, or the best, or some combination of both, when you stumble upon through a Google search your own thing that you've written.
Right, yeah.
Oh, it's like, well, I guess I knew this at one point, but I've forgotten it, or I need to know more about it than I did.
Right, and I thought about like, oh, I can build a Phoenix app, and it'll be part of like a blog, but also partly like, what's the thing that we use? We both use it. Pinboard. Pinboard.
Oh, the bookmarking. Yeah,
pinboardy type tool thing, but also like a cheatboardy type thing, and also a bloggy thing. But I looked at Satomic, and I was like, I can do all that with Satomic relatively easily. Without having a database. So that's what I... That's
and then you
I
get like a free GUI and a really nice free admin GUI. And
it's very nice, yeah. Especially nice. The latest versions are even better. And yeah, so that's what I'm doing. But it's like one of those things where I almost think for almost every developer, a blog is like key. I think that like journaling is key. Like, so when I was teaching guitar, I'd always talk about guitar journals and how important that was to have. For being able to remember things, like if you're writing scales and stuff or learning formulas, it's super important to be able to like write that stuff down and recall it from memory. But it's similar for developers, I think, and it's in for basically the same reasons. Like when you're writing stuff down, it helps you remember them, and then you have a reference of it. But I think even more importantly is when I look back next year, I want to look at the articles and think, wow, I didn't really know that whole lot, you know? I've learned so much since then. And that really helps fight the feeling of like imposter syndrome, or I haven't been growing, or like the feeling like you've plateaued and you're stuck, you know? So again, we've talked about reflection a lot and how important reflection is, even just like interpersonal reflection and professional reflection. Blogs kind of help with that for me a lot. I can write stuff and then I look at it and I feel like I can feel accomplished because, you know, now I know a lot more. I've come a long way. Or I can look at it and be like, okay, that's how I do that. Or even, you know, helping someone else to see how you do that. Because a lot of my bookmarks these days have been from blogs, like have been from agencies writing about Elixir and how they approach things. So, you know, I figured why can't I do that for somebody else?
Yeah. I mean, well, I think I really like your use of the term of the journal you were talking about for guitar stuff. And that's kind of more how I approach it. I don't think it necessarily has to be a blog.
Sure.
I think it can be something that's private, and that still, obviously it doesn't benefit other people, but it still gives you the same benefits in a lot of ways. And it's a lot less time consuming, at least for me. I kind of have issues with writing blog posts where I'll take far too long on them.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes kind of like its own project just to write a blog post and, you know, get screenshots for it or whatever. And I'm like, oh, I could make a GIF for this that will explain it really well, or, you know, just stupid things like that all the time.
Yep.
And so it's like when I'm learning, when I'm reading and programming and I want to remember stuff, I just use like a, you know, notes.app or Bear or something like that. And that works really well for me.
Yeah, as long as you're having that some sort of like reflection going on, and you're able to actually think, have like a meta thought about yourself, or like get into that space and think about things, I think it's important. But yeah, like a blog can kind of force you to take longer because it's public, so there could be more scrutiny. You know, I think that's what I think about a lot.
Plus, these days, whenever I just sit down to write, I just end up writing like, oh, money is fake and capitalism is dying. And it's like, oh, this has nothing to do with computers. Oops.
Yeah. Yeah, that's also fine. It's also good. I feel like I would start writing about how everyone's lying to you and everything's broken.
Yeah, that too.
But anyhow, yeah.
What a uplifting blog we put together.
Yeah. Well, someone can help uplift us. Maybe that's what we need. We need one of our amazing listeners to help us become less cynical. I don't know.
Oh,
I don't know. It's just part of life, you know? Getting older, building more stuff. We've been around the block more times, I guess. There's not to say that, like, we're not excited about things and we're not happy with life.
I'm stoked. I'll tell you, I'm excited on everything Elixir and Phoenix and Ecto.
I'm excited about these tacos I made last night. I found a taco hack, and I like steak tacos, but I don't like to cut the steak up. It sucks. I don't like to take all the time to chop it up. So what you do is you buy this cut called sizzle steak, or on the East Coast, they call it like a pub steak, which is basically like a Philly cheesesteak cut. You grill that up and then season it like a taco, and man, it's good. It's tender and you don't have to spend time chopping.
Okay.
And it cooks in about 2 minutes. It cooks so fast because it's just thin shavings of meat.
Right. Ooh. Mm. Oh, man.
Yeah.
And now I'm just looking at pictures of steaks. This isn't even a podcast anymore.
We're expanding our content area. We'll have Brent on the show to talk about cooking.
Oof.
As I understand, he just started making his own cheese, so that's pretty cool.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go, we'll put a link to that in show notes. I'm sure he's talked about it somewhere.
I'll also put a recipe for my the salsa or the hot sauce I made last night. I started making hot sauce recently, and the stuff will blow your brains out. It's so hot. It was awesome because I put it on the table. I was like, this is hot, and I walked away. And then like 2 minutes later, I hear people, oh my God. My God. It was really funny. Oh. I warned them.
You told them.
I did. But yeah, I might just go eat some more of that hot sauce right now because I think it's far more effective at waking me up and making me feel alive than coffee is.
Enjoy, man. I hope you feel very alive.
I'll let you know. See ya.
Well, that's exactly what I'm trying to... Oh my God, I gotta sneeze.
Come on.
It won't come, Sean.
Self-Heimlich.
I can't sneeze. Anyhow, sorry, Sarah.